holy name, that's the main principle. Always remember Krishna, then that means you're always absorbed in Krishna, absorbed in his name, form, qualities, pastime. But the other side, never forget Krishna, that means being able to either give up those things that are not useful in Krishna consciousness, or engaging those elements of attachment in Krishna, right? So the technicalities convince us to give up those things that make us forget Krishna. Does that make sense? But we understand where these other things come in. So just because they might at present take up more of our life and time-wise, but it doesn't mean the quality is the same. The quality is those things that are direct service to Krishna, right? The chanting of the holy name, hearing of Bhagavatam, associating with devotees, worshipping the deities, living in the Dham, right? So these are the main elements. Then everything else is in support of that, either in direct support of that or indirect. Right, so Pancharatra is directly supporting that, because it works only because you are performing these five activities. Right? While the Vedic then is removed from that, and that then those things that are actually the real distracting things are then turned around and connected to Krishna. Does that make sense? So the hierarchy is there. Bhagavat's the main, then Pancharatrik, then Vedic. The idea is body, mind, and words should be engaged in the Lord's service. So whichever position or combination is required that you're fully absorbed, that's what we're trying to do. Does that make sense? So there's no specifically you could say right position for the individual. Right? Correct means fully absorbed. But what varna, what ashram, how much one's absorbed in the Pancharatra, the Bhagavat, that, as far as sadhana goes, that's secondary. We know the Bhagavat's better, is the best position that's supported by Pancharatrik, and that can be assisted by the Vedic if you know what you're doing. But the point is, it's whatever's going to work for you, that's the position you should be in. But knowing that the Bhagavat is the superior position, therefore one is always endeavoring to move in that direction. And one moves at a speed that actually works. Right? Festivals are there to always push more than what we are accustomed to doing. But our day-to-day life should be something that we can maintain. Right? Because mode of goodness means maintenance. Right? Passion is creation, ignorance is destruction. So that lifestyle you can maintain and maintain your Krishna consciousness, that's the mode of goodness. Then for special occasions, festivals, that, then we push ourselves beyond that. You know, you can fast until midnight with no water because the next day you can eat, right? And then you learn, hey, I went all day without eating. Why am I complaining I'm going to die if I don't eat by 9 o'clock? So like that, then you slowly learn that it's not all our material needs actually aren't as important as we give them, how you say, recognition. Does that make sense? But it's important to be able to do that, otherwise being in the neutral position, the tendency will be to go towards ignorance, right? Neutrality will always turn negative. So that means there has to be a dynamic standing in the mode of goodness. Static position is only when you don't actually know what you should do. The static doesn't mean that it's tainted by passion or ignorance. It simply means that one is in the present, not sure what should be done, but are looking for what should be done and is willing to do something once one figures it out. Does that make sense? Very important. Because from that position, then you can understand what should be done. Because otherwise, if it's tainted by ignorance, then, oh, I don't know, I can't do anything, I'm useless. That means you won't do anything if the opportunity arises. And then passion, then, oh, yes, I'll do this, I'll do that, I'll do so many things. But since you don't actually know what the moment is offering, you'll generally always make a mistake, and therefore you'll become angry. Does that make sense? So The mode of goodness means you're aware of the present right now and are willing to act upon it, because activity cannot be accomplished without focus. So unless you're focused on what's happening right now, then you won't be focused to do an activity when the opportunity arises. It's a very important position to be able to take, right? Because then you're always aware. Activity takes place in the moment. So that means time, place, circumstance must be applied to the moment. Because time, place, circumstance, that's connected to the, means we say we want to apply something. And we therefore it should be practical. And then sometimes we hear, well, you know, Vedic is kind of like old and all that. It's not practical, right? Well, modern, of course, is the cat's meow. You have a saying, local saying? I don't know. Not even something like that. it's the perfection. Right? But the point is because they say time, place, and circumstance. But personally, I say whoever says that is only talking. Because I can guarantee that whoever said that could not explain what time, place, and circumstance mean. So it sounds great. That's the nice thing about the modern. It sounds very nice to the mind. And you cut short any, you know, too much intellectual kind of like complication. So it's very simple and sounds very sweet. So which is an important ability to be able to do. But it doesn't mean it's correct. Does that make sense? Someone says, don't worry, everything's going to be okay. Okay, so then if it's in a situation that warrants an emotional exchange, that will work very nicely, right? But let's say we're out in the middle of the street and there's a riot going on, then we don't say, oh, don't worry, everything's going to be all right. So therefore, this simplistic emotional approach may not always be the right situation for actually getting out of the material world. Does that make sense? So time, place, and circumstance can be fully understood when the principle is understood. The principle always applies. So that means it's always applicable. But you must take that principle and apply it in detail to the present situation. Does that make sense? So that's actually where the problem lies. Because if someone says the Vedic's not practical, means they don't actually understand the principles of the Vedic. So that means it only leaves you with detail. And yes, having the inability to understand the difference between detail and principle means you will fail in some situation. How many details can one individual memorize? But if you understand the principle, then through contemplation, you can apply that principle to the time, place, and circumstance. Right? The principle is a formula how to operate the field. So what takes intelligence is understanding what is the field and which formula you're supposed to apply. Does that make sense? So in application means activity, that means there's a verb. So as we mentioned, you have time, mood, and accomplishment, right? So time, place, circumstance means time. Time matches time, right? Place is accomplishment, because it's the place, it's the field, what you can accomplish something with. You know what I'm saying? If you're sitting behind the wheel of a car, that place, you could get the accomplishment of driving. I guess you could also honk your horn or, you know, turn on and off your windshield wipers. But it's the place. Circumstance will be the mood, right? The mood's wrong, you can't accomplish something. So the circumstance is wrong, you can't accomplish something, even though you're in the right place at the right time. Does that make sense? So that's the understanding of time, place, and circumstance, right? The right place at the right time, in the right mood or attitude, then you can accomplish something. So how is that the monopoly of modern thinking? Right? No. That's Vedic thinking. Veda means knowledge. And knowledge means that which actually works. So if anything's working in the material world, it's only because it's actually following the principles set down by the Vedic standard.
Interesting.
And if it doesn't, means it's not. And if it doesn't work, means it's not following the Vedic principle. Does that make sense? So, according to Manu, modern means that which is not Vedic. Because if it's not Vedic, it's temporary. It means you can only see it now. After some time, you won't see it anymore. Does that make sense? Because it'll change. Yeah. So the Vedic application means the moment. That means there must be focus. If you're not focused on what's happening right now, then you're either in the future or the past, which means you're either in the mode of goodness, mode of passion or ignorance. That means then your result is not going to be that good, because only in the mode of goodness do you actually get a result that's proper, right? Another approach to Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana means that the energies that stems from, right? Sat Chit Ananda. Sat is existence. So that's knowledge, Sambandha Gyan. But when that reflects into the material world, that becomes ignorance. Material existence is based on ignorance. Do you understand that connection? The chit then is the knowledge potency, which means there's action. In the Vedic, there's no such thing as knowledge on its own. Knowledge goes with action, right? Jnanis, they take knowledge into the realm of inactivity. But that's a mundane concept, right? Spiritual concept is knowledge means application. Does that make sense? You buy a hammer because you're going to use it. Does that make sense? Everything in your house, you get because it'll be used. So knowledge is acquired to use, right? So the two go together. Right. So that action then becomes in the modes of nature, the mode of passion, right? Because it's action for fruitive result. Does that make sense? So then in the mode of and Ananda, that's happiness, right? That will be your goal, right? Any situation, then the activity performed in that situation is to bring happiness, right? So then the Ananda then transforms in this world as a mode of goodness. So that means happiness is only experienced in the present, not the future or past, right? The future is passion. We make plans, we have our desires. Does that make sense? The past, then we contemplate, we lament. So happiness is only tasted at the present. So when they say a moment of happiness, because a moment is how much we can perceive. Just like in music, a quarter note is all that the ear can actually appreciate. Right? So therefore, even though mathematically you could break a note down more than a quarter, you don't bother because you can't distinguish it. Does that make sense? Right? You have a full note, you have a half note, and a quarter note. You can't hear less than that, so why bother? And in experience, then it's broken down into moments. Moment is 1/11th of a second. Right? So that's why I said a moment of pleasure, because the present is one moment. Right? So only someone on the platform of Naishkarmya can live in the moment. Right, the fruitive worker is living in the future if he's successful, or living in the past if he's not. So that's why, unless you situate yourself in the mode of goodness, you can't be happy. That's why all this blabber about only those in the modern society and modern culture can enjoy, and those following the Vedic are too restricted, that's the blabberings of uninformed fools, because happiness is in the present. When is the modern person ever in the present? So when do they enjoy? Right? They're dressing up. It's a mode of passion. They're always in the future. I'm going to go out. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. Right? They go to the nightclub, but they're not in the present. They're looking for someone. Even if they find someone, then how far can they take that someone? And then, having drunk so much, the next thing they know is they wake up in the morning in some bed with a stranger, and that's it. So where was the enjoyment? Where was the present? That they were focused on what they were doing right now and being fully absorbed in that. Basically never. And even if there were a moment here and there, oh, look at that boy, or look at that girl, There was that moment. Think about it. Maybe another moment than when they agreed to go to your house, or they're coming to this one, you're going to their house. Two moments. You understand? This is reality, right? This is not talk. This is science. The modern is not scientific at all. They have math. They don't have science when it comes to relationships. Because give them $1 million, they could not explain what a relationship is. Because unless you understand sambandha abhideya prayojana, you don't really understand. You may know you'd be nice, you'd be this, you can consider the other person. Those are part of that. But where does that come from? Where does good qualities come from? Where does the concept of be nice, don't hurt other people, don't steal from other people, don't get jealous and envious of other people, be honest, be truthful, where does that come from? Modern thinking or religion, right? Where does it come from? It's the remnants of some variety of religion. And religion comes from God. Therefore, when God gives the most complete form of religion, as the Vedic literature, then what's the problem?
Why that won't work? You understand?
So, therefore, one has to have that focus and faith in the Vedic culture, because it works everywhere. Any other culture may work for a particular situation, but take it out of that situation, it doesn't work. That's what's going on. Let us just take a really common example that devotees love to fiddle with. Clothes. So now, in how, at least in my experience, most devotees approach clothes. Actually, is the devotional clothes that we wear, those aren't practical. Define practical. See, I mean, according to how I would understand practical, means that by wearing those clothes, the activity cannot be performed. It's not practical to use a butter knife to screw in the screw. It's more practical to use the screwdriver, right? Because it gives a better result. Or let's say we don't have a screwdriver, so then it's being practical to use the butter knife. Who here can, with full confidence, raise their hand and say, you cannot drive a car, you cannot walk down the street, you cannot get on a bus or tram, you cannot go in a shop and buy something because the devotional clothes stop you from doing that? Raise your hand if you're really confident, you really feel confident that this is true. So therefore, at least in this crowd, no one should ever use that statement again, that it's more practical to wear karmi clothes. Otherwise, then just accept that you're attached and sentimental, and that's just the way it is, and you don't like it any other way, and just be honest. Because that would be modern, right? Being honest, right? Vedic means consistent. Modern means inconsistent. So as we go on, then we start to see that modern is more and more just a conglomeration of our attachments that we loosely hold together with some foolish arguments that change according to the wind. Now, up to now, we've only dealt with detail, externals, because that basically is the depth that anybody takes this point. One may, just as a last point on this before we move forward, even if one does think it's more practical, it's strange how one would switch back into the same kind of clothing that one would have worn before joining Krishna consciousness, not what somebody else would have worn before joining Krishna consciousness. Therefore, it's just attachment. It's not actual reality. Now therefore, we see as even we take that, the modern, but define modern, right? You go out on the street. How many different styles of dress are there? There's people in three-piece suits, right? There's people in just suit and tie. There's people in dress casuals. There's people in, just in casual. Then there's people just plain sloppy. Then there's people that are fashionable. Then there's people that are just outright crazy and outrageous. So which one of those is modern? And when you go out on the street and say, this is the only thing that can be worn, why did you choose that one? Right now, we've just given 6 different options. Does that make sense? That's why I say it's nonsense when someone says, oh, it's practical. Yeah, dhotis aren't practical.
Yeah.
Or saris aren't practical. I've seen ladies in India doing road work. I mean road work, building roads, wearing their saris, keeping their head covered, and carrying their baby. And they're carrying 15 bricks on their head. Right? Any men here could carry 15 bricks on their head?
Yeah,
I'm not joking.
Okay.
15. Okay, at least 12. Now, if you were going to do that, you get out in there in your boots and they're doing it barefooted. And you could say, well, it's different here. It's 40 degrees here, Jack. Where's the difference? So then, right? So this is the point, that modern doesn't have any standards. Any standards that are there are based on the remnants of some religious faith or practice. Religion comes from God. What God gives, therefore, is the most practical. But you have to know what God's talking about. Just like when we were talking about this, the screwdriver and the butter knife can both get screws into your wall. One will do it more efficiently, one less. It's a matter of what you have, right? The situation you're in. So time, place, and circumstance therefore defines what it is you will use. If you don't have the butter knife, you might even try using your fingers. Right? You might be able to get the screw in far enough. It'll at least hold the thing it'll work until you find a screwdriver or a butter knife or whatever else you can get your hands. Does that make sense? In other words, what gets a screw to go in? It's something that's thin enough and wide enough to fit in the slot of the screw, and that you can get some leverage on it so that you can actually screw it in. That's the principle that's working. Therefore, I could take the back of a bread knife and put it on the screw and turn the whole knife and put the screw in. That's what is the principle of a screwdriver, right? We've come up that it's got a long thing and then a flat end and then a handle to hold. But all that is just to get the flat part into the screw and have something which you can get enough leverage to get that torquing action, right? So therefore, if you understand that principle, then you can get the screw in the wall by looking around your house and finding whatever will accomplish those two points. So that's why you would say he's a practical man, because he actually understands the principle behind the mechanics of what he does. Right? So now, taking that into close, all this up to now is preliminaries for the 3-second point that we're trying to make. No matter where you go, what culture, what society, there is clothes that they consider appropriate, right? How that's developed, various modes of nature, time, place, circumstance, on the North Pole, what's appropriate may be different than what is, considered appropriate in the Bahamas. You know what I'm saying? North Pole, the girl's being real bold, showing some skin. You could see the tip of her nose, right? Because it's freezing cold over it. So therefore, then what the Vedas are saying, this is the rule according to Manu, that someone should wear clothes that is appropriate for their age, their position, in society. That's the Vedic principle. Now, is that not being applied everywhere in the world? You're going to a formal program, you wear a suit, right? You're going out fishing with friends, you wear something casual. Is that not going on anywhere, everywhere in the world? Every last culture, down to the last person? So how are they not following the Vedic principle? Right? So that there's a concept of appropriate dress and inappropriate dress, that's Vedic, not modern. The concept of appropriate dress, the concept of economics, the concept of social position, that an administrator or, the person who heads the country should have power. Is that not in every culture? So where does that come from? Kshatriyas have power. You're in the business field, you're successful by how much money you have, not how much knowledge or how much influence you have. If you're an academic, then it's how much knowledge you have, right? If you're an artist, it's how good you are expressing your art. Where do these come from? Universal principles. You can't get around them because it's established by God. So now, this is what it actually comes down to. There is a hierarchy of everything. It means the screwdriver is better than a butter knife, you know, which would be probably better than a bread knife, which is definitely better than your fingers. But they're all following the principle. So, therefore, dress then, the most appropriate dress for the human nature, performing human activities, is the dhoti and the sari. It perfectly accomplishes the needs of the individual. The man wants his legs free. A dhoti doesn't do that. That's why it's split. But in its being split, you can appreciate the legs, but it doesn't bring out the grossness. You can see the sides of the legs, but you can't see the front or see the back. So, therefore, it works perfectly. For the ladies, then it's covered. You don't want to see the individual legs. It covers the chest. And since a girl is going to fidget and play around at all times anyway, then is it better she plays with her hair or with the end of her sari? The modern girl says, oh, it's such a trouble to keep the sari on your head. But a girl with loose hair, what does she do every 3.5 seconds? Fiddle with her hair. But modern fiddling creates attraction. But playing with the sari does not. Femininity is addressed, but not sensuality. Therefore, it's more refined. Right? You have to have something to play with. The girls that shave their heads, they have little puppies to play with. Something must be there to play with. Or if you wear your super tight tank tops and really low cut, what do they call them, hip huggers or whatever the hell they are, then what are they doing all the time? Pulling them up and make sure they don't fall off. No? Then? Does that make sense? So it's the most refined, and it addresses perfectly the human nature. Then, according to time, the different cultures, the time, place, and circumstance, therefore then they have their dress that they call formal, you know, what's informal, what's just common, and what's called just inappropriate. So in other words, the principle is wear that which is appropriate for the particular time, place, and circumstance. So therefore, if you have to wear a tie at work, you wear a tie at work because that's what's appropriate. You're dealing with people that's what they consider, you know, refined. You're not wearing it because the dhoti is not practical. It's not practical because the persons you're associating with don't understand it. They don't appreciate it. Does that make some sense? It's a different approach. It puts it on the other people rather than on the devotees. The devotees are fanatic. Karmis are not fanatic. If someone's not fanatic, that means they're very open-minded. So if they're not fanatic, why would they be upset if you wore your dhoti? Because they're fanatic karmi. So that's why you're wearing this suit. Not because devotees are fanatic, because the karmis are fanatic. You understand? You have to understand where the fault lies. Why it's always the devotees, the Vedic culture. If you follow anything, then it's, oh, you're fanatic. According to modern culture, right, is it proper to steal? That's a rule. Why aren't they fanatic? If you're so broad-minded, then you don't care if people come in and steal all your stuff, move into your house, take your wife, and, you know, everything like that, because you're broad-minded. You're not fanatic. Hey, cool. The definition of fanatic means a person who follows rules that I myself don't consider valuable. That's a fanatic. In other words, I'm the perfect example of perfection. And anyone else, they're fanatic or out of it. They follow rules I wouldn't follow, they're fanatic. They don't follow rules that I would follow, then they're out of it. Does that make sense? In other words, the standard for everything in the cosmic creation we put upon ourselves. But that, unfortunately, is a problem. Because in the spiritual world, The center of everything is Krishna. Everything circles around Krishna. That's why here is a perverted reflection. Mm-hmm. Perverted meaning the reflection looks exactly the same, but the perversion is each individual item in the reflection thinks they're the center of everything. While in the spiritual world, every living entity knows Krishna is the center of attention. So the whole idea is if you understand the principle, it doesn't matter. Prabhupada said, okay, because he understands the principle. Vedic clothes are that which a gentleman wears. If you can't wear that, then you dress like a fine, up-to-date gentleman. So therefore, then, for those of you here not wearing devotional clothes today, who can raise their hand confidently and say, I am dressing like an up-to-date gentleman? So then that means you don't understand what clothes are for. Up-to-date means what's going on today. You know, is it three-button, four-button, two-button? You know, more sedate ties, more colorful ties. You know, something cultured. Think about it. Can you even think of anybody in this yatra who, when they dress up in not devotional clothes, actually look like gentlemen? And would you need more than one hand to count them? Right? And how many hundreds and hundreds of devotees are here? Right? So that's the point, is the Vedic is practical if we want to accept it. But if we just want to do whatever we want to do, that's another discussion altogether. But leave the Vedic out of it. Don't blame the Vedic because you just want to do whatever you want to do. Just say, I'm comfortable in this. What can I do? I like looking like a slob. I love looking like a prostitute. What can I do? I love to look cheap and common. You know? I feel at home. You know? I grew up under a rock, so therefore when I crawl out under from my rock, I want to, you know, be me. Don't blame the Vedic. Getting on a bus, right? Here you get on a bus in a line, one at a time. You try getting on a bus where there's 10 other people trying to get on and 15 others trying to get off, and it all has to happen within 2 seconds, right? And still they do it in dhotis, right? Called Calcutta. You know, here you go into a nice shop or a nice mall. You know, you try walking around the grungy back streets of the shops there. Right? And the really amazing thing is the people with money, they may be wearing the karmi clothes. But the guys that are doing actually the hard physical labor, carrying everything around on their head or dragging it behind them in these funny little carts, they're all wearing Indian clothes. Therefore, do me a favor. At least in this one, drop it. Don't blame the Vedic culture. Oh, it's 5,000 years ago. Oh, it's Indian. Oh, it's this. Oh, it's that. Oh, it's just I'm a stupid, attached idiot, and I can't stop, shut up. I'm not smart enough to understand the principle of clothes that I dress appropriate for the situation I'm in. Does that make sense? And then we dress appropriately. Whatever that appropriate needs to be, that doesn't matter. The point is, I'm following the Vedic culture of doing that. Any questions?
So he's practicing martial arts, and well, it's he's tried in dhoti, but it somehow it doesn't work so much. Or if it works, it's put on in a way that Prabhupada doesn't sanction it. It's kind of like as if it were trousers.
Who said he didn't sanction it? Have you ever seen pictures of Arjuna when he's on the battle? He's wearing those kind of like. Black kind of pants with the elastic at the ankles, right? In all the pictures of Arjuna? Yeah? Yes? No. He's wearing a dhoti. And how is the dhoti worn?
Two ends of it are tied in the back.
Yeah. You ever seen pictures of Ramachandra when he's with his bow? Same. So that's the point. Is they get all the fancy stuff out of the way, and then it's... Who said it's not authorized? There's so many ways you can put on a dhoti.
It's allowed to wear dhoti like that in his car?
Yeah, I've seen God brothers wearing it like that. But besides that, just even taking the point, let's have some fun here. What you train with in the dojo is what you always wear, right? Then, what's the meaning of the practice? The point is when you're walking down the street and some guy attacks you, then you go, 1 minute. And then you step into a phone booth, change into your black outfit, and then jump out and go, ha! No? That means you have to be able to fight in whatever you're wearing, right? Like that. I've seen in India many times where guys go into like a playful fighting mood and they're wearing dhotis. And without even thinking, just in a moment, they take their dhoti and pick it up and adjust it so that they can wrestle and fight. Right? How many times in a day does a samurai draw a sword and put it back?
Not even once.
I don't know, people in the field have told me 1,000. I'm saying practicing. They pull it out, they put it back. They pull it out, they put it back. Because it's got to be that without thinking you can just pull it out. So that means you might want to spend a few minutes having your dhoti and then figuring out how to put it the way you want it in a split second. And then put it back, and then put it in the way you want it. Like that. Because I've seen it in India, people do it.
From this afternoon on Chitaya, we'll be making practice. Just go down.
Well, no, he's happy that he can put it on the other way now. Of course, you can always carry a 45 Magnum and then you don't have to worry whether you got a dhoti on or not. Probably mentioned that also.
Just for fun, could we hear about that a little bit more?
No, I mentioned that someone's spending 10 years perfecting the martial arts and Prabhupada made the point, and then with one gun they can shoot you. You know what I'm saying? Because the Kshatriyas would know wrestling, but that wasn't their full repertoire, right? Like you saw, Bhima and Jarasandha are very expert at wrestling. Wrestling includes, you know, kicking and punching, right? Elbows, everything. In the wrestling match, Krishna killed, what is it? Mushtaka and Shonura.
Mm-hmm.
He killed one of them by kicking him behind the ear, right? And you won't kick somebody that's not facing you. So what kick would you have to use to kick someone behind the ear? You understand? Like that. And then when Krishna threw Kamsa down, then he punched him. At the same time as then so many times, and like they pick each other up, throw them on the ground and stuff like that. But that was just general, if you don't have anything else, that's what you use. So one knows that one is good at it. But besides that, then one would know other weaponry according to what's appropriate for the situation. Does that make sense? That's the higher level of the martial arts is therefore to be able to use anything as a weapon. Does that make sense? Like that. So then one knows all these things. Something else?
So at the beginning we heard about the application of time, place and circumstance, but we also heard that the mood is important. And so if we if we receive an instruction that we have to carry out and we apply the instruction to the place, time and circumstance, but we are not in the proper mood, then it means that we won't achieve the desired goal. So
mood is circumstance. Time is the particular time according either the time of the day or the season or, you know, whatever it is that you would be the consideration of time. You have an activity you want to perform, you have to be in the right location. Right?
Okay,
if you want to distribute books, you go out where there's a lot of people. It's the right place. If you go in that room there, then you might not distribute a lot of books. You know what I'm saying? I'm not sure what line you'd use for the bag of sack of sugar there. Well, these books are, you know, so sweet. Any place that you start to read, it's all sweet. Right? And then the sack of sugar looks at you and go, hey, anywhere you bite here, it's sweet also. You know what I'm saying? So if you don't go to the right place, you can't accomplish your goal. But the circumstance is going to determine your mood, right? You have the wrong mood, even if you're in the right type and place, it won't work. So mood's not outside the verb.
Bend the one.
It's It's part of the consideration of the verb. That's what I'm saying. An activity means the verb is being applied by the subject on the object.
Right. So the verb means
time, mood, and accomplishment. It's put in that order because that's how it's going to work. Only at the right time in the right mood can you accomplish something. But when you put it into time, place, and circumstance, the same thing. Right? Then you look at it, it's the right place, the right time, and the right mood, then it'll get to work. Because even if you're in the right place, if the time's wrong, it won't work also. You're down at the, you know, in front of the bus station at, 3 in the morning, but no one's there, the bus station's closed. Right place, wrong time. You may have the right mood, wrong time. Does that make sense? So the three go together. It's just like sambandha avideya prayojana. Relationship, the process, and the result you'll get. Very logical. But if you look at it from the mind, then it's thinking, feeling, willing, right? Only when I'm thinking about it, sambandha, and then I actually want the result, prayojana, feeling, then I will work, avideya, right? So thinking, feeling, so when you're dealing with the rasa, you're going thinking, feeling, willing. So it means sambandha, prayojana, avideya, right? That makes sense? In activity, the field is there, you operate the field, you get a result. But the only reason you operate the field is because you want a result. So therefore, you're going to prayojana before you perform the activity. But by performing the activity, then you actually get the prayojana. So the need for it is prayojana. Getting it is prayojana. Does that make sense? So getting it is the result of the activity. But the activity is only performed because you want it. So like that, then you have to see is that depending upon what aspect you're looking at, therefore you'll take it in a particular way.
At the beginning you mentioned that material needs are not as important as you think they are. And the Mahabharata begins with the episode of Domya Rishi and Upamanya, and it said that Upamanya was taking milk from a cow, but he reduced the amount day by day, so he reduced his eating, his intake. And is there a connection between our spiritual life and the reduction of our intake of food? So is spiritual advancement and reducing our material like food? And also the four stage or the four levels of sannyas are also connected. Always connected to the reducing of food.
Food's very important for you. And Upamanyu and Ayodhya, the point was is that you're not accepting anything that's not approved by Guru. Food can be used as one example. You know what I'm saying? You could use anything. So when you're dealing in an ashram with brahmacharis, there's not much else than food. You can't say, oh, you got married without asking me, or, you know, you went out and, you know, you bought your Bentley without asking me, or, you know. So therefore, you know, basically work and food, if you'll notice, that's where all the examples are being done. Bhima was no less of a devotee than the other Pandavas. So when they would go out begging in Ekachakra, how would they divide up the food? 50% of the food that they begged went to Bhima, right? And the balance was eaten by the other six of them. Even then he was hungry. That's why he was so happy when he got the opportunity to go kill Baka. Because besides the exercise, then there was a whole cartload of food. So he ate the whole cartload of food. And even when Baka came and was complaining he's eating his food, he said, don't disturb me. When I finish eating, then we'll work it out. Like that. So the point is food will be one area where it is. So what is authorized, that's what's taken. That's the point. If, you know, another example is there, is that if you're eating more than you require, so therefore you become lazy, then that's not proper. But if you eat less than what you need, then you also aren't going to be very efficient in your service. So it's not whether it's more or less, it's whether it's the right amount, right? And the right amount changes according to the time, place, and circumstance. So you can see food is a consideration for, you know, that has to be seen in light of one's spiritual development. But it's not necessarily eating less food is what you're looking for. Eating the right amount of food is what you're looking for.
We mentioned that in the Vedic system everything works nicely. And in connection with the relationships, how can we work them out in a way that that they don't become sentimental, so that we don't become too sentimental, but they don't become too cold and detached. So, for example, when the Upadishamita speaks about the exchanges between devotees, we are not impersonal and cold towards them, so we just throw a present at them, or we just throw the food in front of them, or we just, if they open their, if they reveal their minds, we tell them that they are stupid. But we don't go to the other extreme either, that we don't become too sentimental. So how can we work out that our relationships work in a proper way without being too sentimental or too impersonal?
As we mentioned before, the chit potency, the sambit potency, means knowledge and activity together. Does that make sense? So that means activity performed with knowledge. Like in, we see in the Gita, Krishna is saying, perform your duty with knowledge, without desiring the result, remembering Krishna for Krishna. So that means performing your duty, okay, so that's your varnashram, without desire for result, so that's naishkarmya. So that's your best level of karma yoga. With knowledge, that's your jnana yoga. Remembering Krishna, that's jnana yoga. For Krishna, that's bhakti. You understand? So the performance of your duties in knowledge, then that will ensure that it works. But that means you're performing it in the moment, not you're not somewhere else. You know what I'm saying? Why would you serve prasad?
Because according to the Upadishamita, this is one way of exchange between devotees. It's a sign of our love towards devotees. Serving them for
shelter. Okay. So it's a sign of the love.